like that, old man? You want a piece of me?
Do I feel like it? Well, do you, Bunk?
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of red cum in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need. The need for speed.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love beats never having to say you're sorry.
You do! You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
I answered. And don't call me sure.
There's no crying in baseball!
This is wrong, bitch.
Hey, the Schwartz baby!
I am the father.
Get you, my pretty.
Take your stinking paws off me.
May the force be with you.
Here's Johnny!
What's up, film fans? Welcome to some more bonus editions of the Cinema Movie Podcast. Welcome as we dig into Spider-Man and the Spider-Man movies before we go and dedicate a whole 2-hour episode to Spider-Man No Way Home, Monday, December the 20th. I am Juan, your host, and I'm joined by the cast. Zach?
They're watching us.
They are. And, man, what an episode. I think this is going to be a fun bonus edition through the next, 6 or 7 weeks as we get ready to talk about Spider-Man No Way Home and just maybe an end of an era. And I want to say that because, this is Tom Holland's last MCU movie.
Yeah.
Unless he signs an extension.
Yeah.
Contractually,
at least. Yeah.
So I think it would be fun to do some fantasy booking in the next few weeks and to see where this could take us. But until then, man, what a Monday we had this past week as we talked all about the Eternals.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Is it bad we already forgot that?
It wasn't that bad, but I want to say thank you to everybody who downloaded it. So today, November the 11th, we're going to talk Spider-Man. Next week on the 18th, we're going to talk Spider-Man 2. And then the following week is Spider-Man 3, November the 25th on Thanksgiving. December the 2nd, Amazing Spider-Man 1. December the 9th, Amazing Spider-Man 2. And then December the 16th, we're going to wrap up and talk Spider-Man Homecoming. And we're going to touch a little bit on Far From Home, even though we did a whole 2-hour episode on that the weekend it came out. So,
and on that episode, we'll probably do some fantasy booking about No Way Home, where we go from here, etc.
And then Monday, December the 20th, when we talk No Way Home, we will rank our top 5 Spider-Man movies.
There you go.
So should be pretty fun. Let's dig into it. If you want to find us, you want to hear more fun episodes like this, our bonus editions are every Thursday, or we have a 2-hour full episodes. You guys can find us on the social media at facebook.com/ the Cinnamon Movie Podcast. The Instagram is one word, at cinnamon405, and then the Twitter is at cinnamon405. Sorry. The Instagram is one word, Cinnamon Movie Podcast. It's been a long week.
Yeah.
It's been a long week. But other than that, it's just a great Thursday evening, Veterans Day here in the United States. Everybody who's listening to us outside the United States, it's just Thursday to you or Friday morning.
Yeah. But here in the U.S., everyone that if you are a veteran, listen to this. Thank you so much for your service. I'm sure it's not easy for what you guys do on a daily basis, and especially with how crazy the world is now. But we just want to say a big thank you from here at the Cinema Movie Podcast.
So dig in tight and let's get ready to talk all about Spider-Man. You guys can also listen to us wherever you do listen to podcasts, whether it be Spotify, Anchor, Podbean, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Pandora, or you can also find us on the Prescribed Films Network. Spider-Man had a May 3rd, 2002 release date with an IMDb rating of 7.3. Rotten Tomatoes is at 90%. The Metascore is at 73%. And the Google users find it at 80%. With a budget of $139 million, this movie currently sits at over $821 million at the box office. And it stars Tobey Maguire, Kristen Dunst, Willem Dafoe, James Franco, Cliff Robertson, Rosemary Harris, J.K. Simmons, directed by Sam Raimi in the first of the Sam Raimi trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
When bitten by a genetically modified spider, a nerdy, shy, and awkward high school student gains spider-like abilities that he has never had, but eventually will use to protect the city from evil. Man, you know, when I thought of let's do Spider-Man on the way to No Way Out or No Way Home, I was like, you know what, these movies, and just like you said a few weeks ago, really, these movies deserve their own full, you know, 2-hour nose-tackled episodes. But I'm like, you know what, we can do these justice in an hour.
Yeah.
Because it literally, these movies are so special to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because either A, this movie introduced them to superhero movies, or this just got them into movies, period. Mm-hmm. Because this came out, you know, if you're around our age, between 25 and 35 years old, you grew up on some of these movies.
Yeah.
And,
you know, I was talking to you off screen a couple weeks ago. I was like, yeah, I was like you. We should really save this because, I mean, this movie turns 20 years old next year, and it's really hard to believe.
It is hard to believe, but let's kind of start talking about it, man. Did you get to see this in the theater?
I did. I think I saw it twice, actually, in the theater.
How old were you? Probably 2002?
Let me do simple math. I was nine years old. Yep. And that was a very... This movie does have a lot of personal effect to me, just because actually, if you go back and listen to our Scorpion King episode, which was a fun episode, that shortly before that movie came out, I was diagnosed with cancer for the second time. I had a major, major surgery. So this was like a week, maybe 2 weeks after this movie came, before Spider-Man came out. And, you know, the ads were everywhere. The trailers were everywhere. Merchandise was off the charts.
Music.
Yeah. The Nickelback song Hero was playing on the radio. I distinctly remember, you know, this is a 9-year-old who just had a major operation done. And the doctor walks into the room and says, hey, how are you doing? Hey, you got to get me better. I got to go see Spider-Man. And, you know, I remember my mom going to get tickets, and it was sold out. I think it was sold out like weeks in advance. It was so hard to get a ticket. But we went, I think that Sunday when it was the first weekend, blast, complete blast. What about you?
I did not see this in the theater, but what? I did get the VHS copy that has just his face on it. And it has Spider-Man above it, and the eye kind of changes. Mm-hmm.
It was like a lithographic.
Yeah. So I got that VHS literally the day it came out. I was so happy to go see it. I wanted to see it in the theaters, but I didn't get to go to it. And then...
And for our people, you know, for our Generation X people, you know, VHSs were cassette tapes that you could play movies on, so...
Good looking out there. But, no, it was a fun watch, man. I remembered... everything about it, and then my high school, middle school, I had the same drama teacher in middle school and high school. If she just wanted a lazy day, this movie was in. This she probably went to 2 or 3 VHS copies of this, because we would just sit and watch it. And this was one of the few movies that, you know, come Oscar season, or at the time, the MTV Movie Awards was a big thing.
Yeah.
The kiss scene.
Yeah.
It was...
Jack Black did... He was like, did a parody of it or something like that.
It blew up everywhere. Well, they actually had Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst at the, you know, Video Awards, and they redid it, and it was just... It was an amazing, amazing watch. So this movie literally... Man, would you... Is this a... I would compare this... And this is, you know... I'm probably going to get something for this, but I would compare this to today's and aged Infinity War. Even though Infinity War almost ended and started something, like, this movie was huge back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just, you know, it was what everybody was talking about. Everybody was dressing like it. The cast ended up becoming huge, huge stars.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I'd probably compare it more to 89 Batman. And that, you know, when that Batman movie came out, it was everywhere.
It's a good comparison.
And, you know, like you said, I mean, it put Tobey Maguire on the map.
Yeah, because before Spider-Man, Tobey Maguire had did Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, Pleasantville, Cider House Rules, Don's Plum, and then Cats and Dogs. That's literally the movies right before Spider-Man. Then Spider-Man took off, and it was everything. It was
everywhere, yeah. And the same for Kirsten Dunst. I think she was in Interview for a Vampire and a couple other things, and that blew her out of the water as well.
But I want to say that this movie, it touches so many people different ways. And I was like, how can we sit here and justify this movie in an hour?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you really can.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I sent out so many messages, and we're going to get emails about Spider-Man, and we'll read them on Monday's episode, because we don't do emails here. This is a completely ad-free show, segment-free show, so we literally just spent an hour just talking about the movie if you guys have not heard a bonus episode yet. So, but let's dig into it, Zach. What did you think of the, first off, in all three movies, Sam Raimi's opening with the music and the different...
The Danny Elfman score. Yeah. This one I thought was really... The credits still hold up, and I think the credits have, in each film, their own little life. This one is just kind of like the actual, quote-unquote, spider web, and it's like revolved around the costumes of Spider-Man and Green Goblin.
With no, yeah, and we'll get into the other ones later. But this one also has really the introduction of, you know, he opens up as saying... You know, he'll take anybody right now. He'll be the fat guy eating the jelly donut, but he's chasing the bus.
Yeah.
And
he's, you know, we start off with nerdy, dorky Peter Parker. You know, he's crushing on MJ so hard, and, you know, he has no social skills whatsoever other than with James Franco's Harry Osborn. And it's just, you really feel for this guy. You know, you really want him to succeed, and, you know, he's the typical high school nerd. And I guess, you know, that's what Parker is in First Out.
Yeah. Were you a big fan of the animated series before this movie came out?
Not really. I know it's highly regarded up there with, like, the X-Men animated series.
But yeah, you just got trashed on in all the emails.
Like, probably. No, but I didn't. Truthfully, I didn't watch it. What about you?
It was one of those that I watched it if it was on. I truthfully didn't go out of my way to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But now I think they're all on Disney Plus.
I'm sure, because, you know, Disney Plus owns everything.
You can watch the amazing... Yeah, you can watch all the different Spider-Man animated series now on like, Disney Plus. They weren't terrible.
No.
I don't remember, no,
they weren't.
I enjoyed the hell out of them.
What do we think... You know, I guess, you know, let's just ask the question. What do we think is Tobey Maguire?
In this recent watch, I liked him more than I usually do. Mm-hmm. You can really, really, really see just the acting from Tobey Maguire. Just, man, there was only a few scenes that I can probably say I don't like him in.
Mm-hmm.
But the scenes where he was emotional or distraught or scared really, really, really step out to me.
Yeah.
What did you think of length?
It's a perfect length. 2 hours, you're in, you're out. Really, without credits, it's like an hour and 56 minutes.
Did this recent watch hold up for you?
Or did you
have any serious issues with it?
I
had two serious issues with it.
I didn't have, like, overall, like, watching the film, because in retrospect, I think some of the graphics are a little, they don't really hold up.
Are you talking about the one where he's in the spider PJs?
Yeah, when after he sees Uncle Ben dies, he runs down the alleyway and he jumps.
It looks like you're playing Xbox.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say GameCube, but all right. And then there's just one or two moments where I think you could have shaved off maybe 5 minutes.
Because we're not going to sit here and, you know, dissect each scene like we do with some of the newer movies, but...
And you could say those are just nitpicks, truthfully.
Oh, yeah. Mine's a nitpick. My nitpicks have nothing to do with the star rating. My other big issue was the Spidey sense.
Is that noise you hear?
No. I get the noise, and, you know, it saves him at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
But some of the Spidey sense didn't make sense to me because it never went off. It didn't trigger.
Oh.
Like,
do you have a scene?
Yeah, it was going to be the fire scene when he's in the house and he's getting trapped by the Green Goblin.
Oh.
Why does his spider sense not go off there?
Yeah, that's true. I didn't really think about that.
And then when he's telling Jameson how much money he wants. Jameson throws the cigar out the window and the cigar comes back. Why didn't his spidey sense go off there? But he was quick enough to dress up as Spider-Man. Now, again, these are just nitpicks. But watching this movie so many years later, I'm going to be honest with you. This is the second time I've watched it since I started the podcast. Remember the first time I watched it, I had the whole complaint about Spider-Man 3, which we'll get to.
Yeah. You know, my only conclusion so
those
to
are the,
that...
those are the only complaints that I have.
And really, I mean, just sitting here thinking about that, I didn't even really think about that until you brought those two scenes up. I could just chalk that up to just, he's still learning the powers.
And that's...
You know, that's just a simple, like, you know, he doesn't really recognize what that means. But, you know...
And that's probably what, that's what I was thinking, you know, as far as just, you know what, this is still the first movie. He's probably still working out some of the kinks.
Yeah.
Because it worked... I mean, he uses it some points throughout the movie,
mm-hmm.
like when Flash is trying to punch him and they have the high school fight scene. It works there.
And then the right before Goblin attacks the parade, it happens right there.
Right.
So it's just, it's there. It's just not as probably as much as it should be.
And that's probably me just paying way too much attention to the detail.
Right.
But, you know, we got the intro. You get introduced to all the characters, which... I think even to this day, Tobey Maguire, James Franco, Kristen Dunst, J.K. Simmons was so perfect, they couldn't even cast somebody else. They bring him back.
Brought him back for this new one.
Yeah, they couldn't even wait for the introduction of the multiverse. They're like, he's perfect. We're just bringing him back.
Yeah.
Which
that in itself, when you kind of think about it.
That's respect.
Yeah.
That's perfect casting.
We'll talk about that when we get to it.
So the first 40 minutes, that's kind of what you get to. What did you think of the wrestling scene? And you get introduced to a very young Octavia Spencer.
Oh.
She's the guy taking the names, saying this ain't no featherweight division, small fry.
Oh, yeah. Because, like, I forgot she was in that, and I showed that up. It's like, you know, she's going to win an Oscar, like, years later after this. It's just a funny... That whole scene is like... Bonesaw.
Macho Man.
Yeah.
What are you doing up there?
You know, I mean, and you get Bruce Campbell. You know, that's the thing with Sam Raimi. He's got to put Bruce Campbell in every single movie
Which
ever.
I can't wait for...
Doctor Strange. Yeah.
And something... I don't think they're going to do it, but something inside me wants to see Bruce Campbell in No Way Home. I just want to.
I bet he will.
I just want to see
You want to go ahead and put... He's going to show... You're here right now, guys. He's going to show up in No Way Home.
We'll bet a double cheeseburger.
But that, you know, honestly, that first hour where
it flies,
and I truly really enjoyed it on this rewatch because it's just kind of like the, you know, anyone that would be bitten by a radioactive spider, it's almost like them figuring out how all this works. Where like he's in his room, and he uses the web. Thank you, to like. Target practice, yep. Almost. It's a great scene. And when he, you know, one of the better scenes of the movie is when he learns how to crawl the wall for the first time. Yeah. And it's almost like, oh, can I just like go out there and try and see if I can do it?
And the thing that impresses me again on this recent watch is they don't spend too much time on anything.
No.
Sam Raimi doesn't spoon feed you what you need. He gives you what you want.
Yeah.
And everything is just... Honestly, everything is just perfect with this movie.
Yeah.
And
I think that's one of the big compliments I can give the Spider-Man movies is that with each, we've only had three iterations, but like with, we get the origin story. Like that's why they don't do it in Homecoming. I don't think they do it in Amazing Spider-Man.
They do it in the Amazing Spider-Man. Yeah.
But I think it's brief, not like a whole.
Well, dude, I was looking at the runtime in Amazing Spider-Man. It's like 2:25.
Oh. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Upcoming episode. But yeah, in Homecoming, they're smart. The writers are smart to say, hey, people have seen the first Spider-Man. They kind of know the origin story. We don't need to do it again. And so I think when we get to that, I think that's a perfect example of what to do as a writer. But in this one, if you've never read the comics, you don't really know how he, you know, I think everyone knows he gets bit by a spider, but no one really knows
what happens next. You also got to remember in this... Tom Holland edition, they don't, you know, go through the whole origin story again, but they do a quick briefing in Civil War.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So you don't
but you don't get the Uncle Ben scene when he dies.
Which I could. What do you think? We're bringing up Uncle Ben. What do you think of the Uncle Ben scene in this one? I think it was perfect.
Yeah, I think that's the best. Well, I think that's the best way you could possibly do it, honestly, because it's like you get Tobey Maguire, and you get a good actor with Cliff Robertson, and it really, you really feel in that moment.
Especially before the wrestling scene, you get the famous with great power comes great responsibility scene.
Right.
And, you know, you just, even though I've seen this movie 100 times and I know the dialogue, you know, when Peter says, you're not my father, so don't preach. And, you know, it's a, dude, it hits you in the feels again.
Yeah.
And I've seen it so many times, it's just like.
And it's sad because, like, you know, as a viewer or as a fan of this movie, when he drives off, like.
It's the last time you see him.
Yeah. It's just like, damn it.
Yeah.
Why you gotta be a dick?
Dude, what did you think of the actual scene where he dies? Did you think it was a little too much where, you know, Peter getting down there and he's still alive and then he finally, you know, croaks right in front of Peter? Or do you think he should have been dead before Peter got there?
I like that. I like how he dies right in front of him. And then, like, there's that one, that scene where, you know, in the background you can hear the officer say, suspect's going down the road or whatever. Yeah. And you just see this look on Peter's face, and it was just like that right there.
Peter's like, evil dies tonight.
Is this the prequel to Halloween Kill? It, you know, in that scene you could really tell that was a universe building thing, because that's going to come back in 3,
unfortunately.
And that sets up the whole stupid Venom thing.
This scene after Ben dies, that's probably the only one I probably could live without, was the
revenge scene.
I liked him dying, and I liked, you know, the aggression that Peter shows, but I just did not like the CGI of him in the PJs.
Yeah, I mean, it looked really bad this time around.
And if they did a really good shot of Tobey Maguire on a rooftop, you know, with, you can tell he was, you know, in front of a green screen, but it was actually Toby.
Yeah,
I don't know why they just didn't maybe do that. Or host him up on some wires and let him, you know, I don't know. But, I mean, that's just a small nitpick.
Yeah.
And then you kind of get the very first look at the Green Goblin. And yeah. Let's talk about Willem Dafoe. Oh, girthy Willem Dafoe.
Yes. You know, while that's going on, we get the whole, you know, you can tell that Norman is not really impressed with Harry, even though, you know, that is his biological son, but it's just like, Peter's the one that's kind of like so interested in science and wants to be part of it. But that, the birth of the Green Goblin, where he wakes up from the gassing and is just like back to stage one, throws the guy through.
And you know, you mentioned it at the beginning of the episode. This has a lot of 1989 Batman feels to it.
Yeah.
You know, almost not like the Joker created Batman, but Batman created the Joker, but almost just like, the two are created equally in the same movie. It's almost like, which one is going to, obviously, you know, Spider-Man's doing it for good, but I like how they teased the Green Goblin to be like, hey, he's somebody like us. Let's see if he can just join our side.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that teasing,
mm-hmm.
even though you knew what was going to happen.
Right.
But I thought it was a fun teasing of, you know, the two monsters that get created in the same movie.
Yeah. And, you know, that's like another hour into the movie, but I love that arc, that the discussion of, like, you know, here's the real truth. Everyone loves a hero, but the one thing people love more is to see a hero die or fail. And, you know, that truly sets up the whole on the bridge thing. And he's got to pick between the kids and Mary Jane. So I think that there's a lot of good setups in the movie. And I think there's a lot of good.
But after, Did you, and this is probably another nitpick, but I'm really not harping on this movie. This recent watch, did the Green Goblin suit age well for you? Kind of with the face just, you know, staying in the same spot. And when Willem Dafoe speaks, you can kind of see through the black film.
Yeah. I mean, I think even truthfully back then, the mask has always been one that's kind of been like, I think you could have.
So it even bothered you to the day then? Like,
yeah, I just think that there could have been a better design for it. You know, but when we get Amazing Spider-Man 2, I don't know if it's much of an improvement, but it's like, I think it could have been a cool combination of like a suit, but also kind of like practical effects.
Almost kind of, and we're jumping the gun, but almost kind of like, I really enjoyed what Harry had in Spider-Man 3. to where it covers up a little bit of the face.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it removes itself if he needs it to.
Yeah.
But you still couldn't see
who it was. Yeah.
Okay, I'm glad I brought that up then, because I was like, surely I'm not the only one who kind of dislikes
the suit. The Green glider is cool, and the weapons are cool, but just the costume itself is kind of like.
Did you notice on this recent watch the purple tint to the top of the the head?
Because
You know, in the cartoon, the Green Goblin had the green face and the purple hood.
Yeah.
Well, in this recent watch, I noticed that when the sun hits the helmet a certain area, it's kind of like got a purplish tint on the top of the Green Goblin mask.
I didn't know that. I didn't notice that now.
What did you think of the, you know, Harry, or not Harry, when Norman did finally start transforming, he kind of has that dual-sided character change. Yeah. What did you think of that?
I like that concept. I don't know if that's from the comic books or not. I thought that was a cool way of kind of showing that this is Norman, this is like a new Norman, but it's also terrorizing the old Norman.
Yeah.
I thought that was a well done way of doing it.
Zach, for Christmas, I think I'm going to get you a big old box of meat. What'd you think when you first got reintroduced to Jameson in this movie?
Perfect. He's awesome. Casting, J.K. Simmons, right? Is like, so I don't know if like
I want a Jameson movie, like just him. And but you know, not only was it perfect casting for him, Sam Raimi's brother as kind of the right hand man.
Yeah, Elizabeth Banks,
and then the other guy, Bill Nunn, who plays Joseph. So all three of those guys, I think, help make Jameson what he is. Mm-hmm. But man, can you think of any other movie and any other character where the casting was spot on?
It's hard. I mean, it's really, like, when thinking about it, like, you name a movie that's like that, it gets really difficult.
He's so good that when they bring him back, it's the same actor. That's just, it hasn't been done. Like, no. You nail it on the spot. That would be like casting Alfred, and you're like, you know what, he's such a good Alfred that no matter what rendition we do, we just have to bring him back.
Yeah, they've never done, and that's a perfect example, because it's like, you know, you get Michael Caine, Jeremy Irons. We're getting Andy Serkis in this new one. It's just they got to have different versions, and I think J.K. Simmons nails that performance so well. It's like, yeah, we're good. Like, yeah. We don't need anybody else. And what's so funny is that, like, I remember seeing an interview with J.K. Simmons, and they asked him about that. He said, yeah, I really was just going in to do like a day's work, and it's like it almost transformed my whole career. Yeah. And then he wins the Oscar, and everyone knows him as, you know, Allstate or State Farmers or whatever.
That's terrible. Young Elizabeth Banks, what did you think of her? Even though she's only in it for a cup of coffee, still think she's, you know, she catches Toby's eye in the movie.
That's a thankless role, and I think, you know, I know that character goes on to do something in the comics, and I think they really could have pushed that.
Well, they almost did in 3.
Yeah, almost. Or they were setting that up in 4, but...
Let's do a little bit of fantasy booking before we talk about the rest of the movie. And, you know, I know we're not doing any...
Do you want to say that for 3? What 4 could have been?
We can, but do you think there was going to be a 4th?
Yeah. There was really going to be a 4th film. And then, like,
By Sam Raimi,
Tobey Maguire was coming back. And I think there's footage of him doing an interview, them asking about Spider-Man 4. And then it was, like, canceled, like, the next week or day or something like that.
Mm.
And then that's how we got The Amazing Spider-Man. So.
Yeah. Because you know what? I finished. For those of you that are listening, if you follow my Instagram on the recent watches, you know that I've finished all 3 Sam Raimi movies.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you know, I picked up Amazing Spider-Man. I'm like, should I start tonight? And I'm like, you know what? Why did this happen? I felt so discontinued.
Yeah.
It's not Andrew Garfield's fault.
No.
And it's not any of that cast's fault. But, you know, it was the first 3, even though 3 was so-called bad, I'm going to, you know, retrace my steps. I can't wait to talk about it.
3, I don't think
it made the money.
Yeah.
It wasn't as, honestly, it's not as
three
bad.
Three is not as bad as everyone says.
No.
You know what this is? I was thinking about this. We can talk about it next week in Spider-Man 2. This is similar to The Godfather in that the first two are excellent, and the third one is like, you could live without it.
But it still got nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, but like, in the grand scheme of things, you think the first two, but not the third. And that's the same way with Spider-Man, this trilogy. Because like, you know,
but honestly,
like I said, three is not bad, but there are some bad things.
You can honestly say that about every trilogy. The third one, you know, they talk about it in Scream. You know,
unless it's Toy Story 3 or Return of the King, which I know you haven't seen Return of the King, but
Jesus, Zach, now you had to pull out the Toy Story 3 on me.
Yeah, well, you said, and I was like, no, bitch, there's Toy Story 3.
Other than the two exceptions, usually the third one is always the worst.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about Scream 3 here in a couple weeks. And
hey, it's the month of trilogies almost, because we're also getting ready to talk about Matrix 3.
Yeah.
So, what did you think of the festival scene? That's really the first time that you see Spider-Man and Green Goblin
lock up,
and you know, you kind of have your two or three rounds in this movie as well, like you do. We talked with King Kong versus Godzilla and some others. You know, you get three rounds and.
The parade scene's really cool, and the one scene that always, like, not freaked me out, but always got to me was the, out, am I? And he turns the whole boardroom into, like, skeletons.
Oh, yeah, that was a good scene.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back just a little bit, because I want to talk about Willem Dafoe saying, you know how hard I sacrificed?
Yeah.
What a great way to deliver some dialogue. When he stood up and he started yelling, I, like, tucked my ass. I was like, oh, shit, he's mad at me.
Oh, it was just like... And Dafoe is such a good character actor where it's just like, okay, like, Goblin showed up in that right there. But it's also like, please give me another chance.
How underrated is Willem Dafoe, though?
He's an excellent actor. I mean, we
kid with him a lot. And so does a lot, so does a lot of other people, because they're like, it's almost like he's in something every other year.
Yeah.
And he's another one of those actors where he's in something that's go straight to DVD or straight to streaming one day, and then the next week he's in a Oscar-worthy performance.
Yeah, he's gonna. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about him now, but here in a couple of weeks he's gonna be in the new Guillermo del Toro movie, Nightmare Alley, Bradley Cooper.
Oh yeah.
And so it's just like he can do like throwaway things like just paychecks, but he can also do like Finding Nemo, The Florida Project. What was that Van Gogh movie? At Eternity's Gate.
Oh, yeah.
I think he was really good in that. And so, like, he's a capable...
Antichrist.
And he's in a lot of Wes Anderson movies. And so it's just like, you know, he's there, I think, because Anderson relies on him. But, you know, he can make a character. And
he can throw down.
He can be the memorable part of a movie.
And at some point, honestly, correct me if I'm wrong, or we can argue about it. Is he the best part of Spider-Man in this first movie? You get a young Tobey Maguire who's still trying to, you know, he's still kind of a little wet behind the ears. Kristen Dunst, maybe, she's good, but she kind of annoys me in some scenes. But I think it's just because of the way her character is in this movie.
Yeah.
If I'm sitting here, to me, the two people who probably steal the show would be Franco or Willem Dafoe.
I would say Maguire and Dafoe, because it's like, if your hero and villain don't work, then you don't have a good movie. Franco, to me, I think he's better in two, but he's just kind of like a whiny baby in this movie, to be honest.
Because this is the one where he is pretty much... I got the whiny baby concept more in two.
The scene at the end where he vows revenge, I thought he played that perfectly. And that sets up what comes next.
But yeah, I thought Dafoe was probably the best actor in this first movie.
Yeah.
You
know, we get the parade scene and...
What'd you think of Thanksgiving? The Thanksgiving scene where, you know, this is right after the firehouse scene where Spider-Man goes in, he saves the baby,
mm-hmm.
and then you know, somebody else is up there coming to find out it's the Green Goblin.
Yeah.
Which honestly is it's kind of a dark, scary scene.
Yeah.
Because he sees the old, who he thinks is an old lady in the blanket, and he turns around, it's Goblin.
Yeah.
Kind of like, that's a pretty terrifying scene.
I think I jumped in the theater seeing that.
Yeah.
And there's always, you know, it's a superhero movie, so there's always like funny puns like, no one says no to me.
Yeah.
Which says, you know, when Johnny goes, he can't find his Blu-ray. That's exactly what he says.
Oof. Or I enjoyed the Thanksgiving scene where they have the first Thanksgiving in Peter's and Harry's apartment.
Yeah.
And he had to get some cranberries.
Oh, yeah, and the blood. He's hiding on top of the roof.
And Willem Dafoe is already in the elevator looking all menstruified, like he's on a period.
Well, and you know, that scene right there, a lot of people would think that's like, what? But I think that's a testament to you actually hear the blood droplet hit the floor. And you know, like, you know, he has... Norman is on the same level as Parker in that, like, he has super hearing.
He senses something.
Yeah.
Which is true, because he does sense that, you know, once he sees his arm is injured, he's like, I know who it is.
Yeah.
You know?
And then, you know, when he has the fight, the psychological fight between Goblin and Norman, it's just like, you know, you need to kill him. And he's like, I can't.
Where he tells Harry, do what you want with her and be on your way.
Yeah.
Because,
like, by that point, like, the Goblin is really almost, like, fully taken over. And Norman just has, like, little moments of, like, release where he has the ability to talk.
Yeah. What did you think of the capturing scene where Goblin goes after Aunt May? Well, he puts Aunt May in the hospital, mm-hmm. and then he captures Mary Jane.
Yeah. We don't really get to see that. We don't get to see Mary Jane captured, but, you know, she wakes up on top of the bridge. And so... And that, you know, I do like that phone call where he tries to call her and says, can Spider-Man come out to play? And, like, you know, like, it's about to go down. So.
Did you like the way this whole movie is, did you enjoy the final ending of them on the rooftop? And, you know, the spider suit is starting to wear down and tear. And
the abandoned building. Yeah. I like the hand-to-hand combat scene in that. I mean, it kind of gets a little...
You didn't feel any kind of how, you know, when we talked, you didn't feel any letdown in this recent watch?
Mm-mm.
No?
No.
It's
surprising how there's not, I mean, probably the action is probably it's not the weaker part, it's just kind of, there's not much in it compared to... You know, the rest of the movies and what a superhero movie could be.
True. So it didn't bother you any that you didn't have a lot of punches thrown between the two?
No. Because, you know, honestly, you know, X-Men was a couple years before that, and it's almost the same structure. So.
I want to put you on the spot. Which one do you enjoy more?
Spider-Man.
Not even close?
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
What about you?
I'd have to say same. X-Men, to me, we talked about it, which it feels like we didn't even talk about it. I don't know if you got to join us for that one. When we talked to X-Men 2000.
Yeah.
Were you there?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. X-Men, to me, is just... I got to be in the mood for X-Men.
Yeah.
Like I said before we went on the air talking about it, all I got to do is listen to that Chad Kroeger song, and I can...
Let's watch Spider-Man. Watch it. Yeah. X-Men, to me, truthfully, I think Spider-Man aged better than X-Men. I don't know. I mean, not just to say visuals or anything, just like, you know, like you just said, you know, I'd rather you ask me which one you want to watch. I'm Spider-Man 100%.
Yeah, I can see that. I can also see the same in the sequels, like how we talked about this past Monday.
Yeah.
X-Men 2 to me does feel a little overrated.
Yeah. Because of this.
What would you say about, you know, the way Osborn goes out? Did you enjoy the Green Goblin death of his own glider?
Yeah. Because I think by that point, you know, I don't think Norman really exists anymore by that point. And I think Goblin was so obsessive to try to be a quote unquote father figure to Spider-Man. And that it killed him. Like it literally killed him. And then, you know, I mean, that right there sets up basically the rest of the trilogy, because, you know, we get the funeral scene and Harry vows revenge.
Do you get a funeral at the end of every movie?
I can't remember. No, we get the wedding scene at the end of 2.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then the funeral 3. At the end of 3.
Yeah. And then what do you think about the Mary Jane confessing her love to Peter and realizing that, you know, I think she's always known Peter as Spider-Man. I mean, we officially get that in 2, but I think there's always been, because when they kiss, she has that same, like, realization.
Because she finally, she don't kiss Toby in this first one, does she?
Yeah, at the end. And then he kind of declines her, he declines her love and says, I'm Spider-Man. And we get the ending scene with him flying, swinging through the city and the song.
Okay, so at the end of the first one, he does tell her he's Spider-Man.
No. He doesn't say he's Spider-Man, but he just says, I can't be with you. And then he just walks off. And that's the end of the movie.
I mean, I think out of every ending, to me, I do have some small issues with the endings in each movie. Mm-hmm. Not with Spider-Man going off, because I think that's how all superhero movies should end. With the hero going off and, you know, until next time. It's trouble time. No, I think I think that's how they should always end. But I do have an issue with every single Peter Parker ending. I'm fine with Spider-Man ending the movie, but I'm not okay with the way that Peter ends the movie in each film, if that makes sense. And in this one, let's say, I didn't enjoy the kind of cliffhanger moment between the two. Of him declining but not saying he's Spider-Man.
You see, like, because we can't really talk about the way 3 ends, that ending is truly...
It's weird because it's...
It's the end.
But was it... Like you said,
you wonder if it's supposed to be a cliffhanger and then that's it.
Yeah. It's almost like who shot JR?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Because is it a cliffhanger? Were they going on to 4?
Yeah.
Or was Sam Raimi, you know, he could have directed like, okay, this is my final one. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Because technically at the end of 3, he gets the girl. He's happy in his Spider-Man
role. Evil's defeated, and that's it.
So to me, that's why I asked you about 4 earlier. Because to me, when I finished 3, I was like, perfect ending. But you know,
let's talk about it when we get there.
We have time for you to do some digging.
Yeah. And the ending for this film, I think you're right. It is perfect because he has to take the mantle of Spider-Man. And,
well, no. I didn't like the perfect ending in 1.
Oh, see, I like that because it's like... Because
I didn't like the cliffhanger ending. Even 20 years later, looking at the end, and I, you know, I'm about to put in 2. I know what's going to happen in 2. I still didn't like, just tell her you're fucking Spider-Man. She already kind of knows. She kind of smells, she smells the D. Just tell her you're Spider-Man.
Right. That'd be your version of how everything ends.
That's Spider-Man 1.0 instead of Spider-Man 2.1.
No, it's... if anything, like, when that movie ended in 2002, I craved more. I want to see the next chapter.
Right.
And we had to wait 2 years to watch it, but I mean...
But how did you feel this recent time? You know, were you...
No, I feel fine with it.
You're still fine?
Yeah, I like the ending.
It's fine.
Yeah, well... it's fine because it makes sense for not only what comes next, but just like how the movie's supposed to end.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good ending. I'm not sitting here trash on. I kind of wanted even all these years later to just be like, you know what, man, just tell her you're Spider-Man.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But I do like how he glides throughout the whole city and then he looks up and I got to say the visuals.
At the end of the movie, really hold up.
Yeah. And sometimes it's so good to where you're like, is this a live filming of him in the suit or is this CGI?
Yeah.
Because the suit looks amazing even when he's physically in the suit.
Well, that's a combination of, you know, both visual and practical because what they did was they rigged a camera on some wires and just let it like gleam through the city, and then that's like kind of the first person look of what it would be like to be Spider-Man.
Is it this one, or is it? It may be all of them, but are the Spider-Man eyes practical effects, or are they green to where they can CGI the eyes?
These are the practical ones.
So when you see the reflection in the eye,
you kind of see like the cheekbone move. Those are practical.
Or what? No, I'm talking about like when you see the reflection in the eyeglass.
Oh yeah,
those are that's practical reflection or is it CGI? Because
I think it's a mixture. I think
either way, it was fantastic. I didn't have any CGI problems with this 20 years later, other than the
pajama pants.
Yeah.
So,
did you have any, like, strictly just pure favorite scenes that you want to maybe just mention?
I like the whole montage of them trying to figure out, you know, the Spider-Man. And then it cuts directly to J. Jonah Simpson. Who is Spider-Man? He's a freak! A menace!
So, yeah, those are all good.
That's awesome. And then, like, the scene where he... You know, it's an intimate scene, but it's not really has nothing to do with, like... Well, it has everything to do with it, but I mean, like, the whole... Where he's taking out the trash and he's talking to MJ and, like, you know, what are your plans? And
oh, yeah, yeah.
That, to me, is kind of like a... It's a good human moment in a comic book movie. Because it's just like, you know, these two characters... Like, you clearly can tell that they like each other, but not... They don't know how to show their affection.
Yeah.
So, what about you?
I would probably say the wrestling scene, because I'm a big wrestling fan, is always fun for me to watch.
Bonesaw!
I do enjoy every single scene that J.K. Simmons is on.
Yeah.
Hysterical. I do like the scene that we didn't touch a lot of it on, but I do enjoy the scene where Norman is getting strapped in and the gases and, you know, his eyes roll in the back of his head. He changes into the Green Goblin.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's tremendous.
There's a piece of dialogue that he says right before that where he's like, you know, I think he's reading like the bottle or something. He's like, you know, 50 million years of human evolution and we barely tapped what we could do as a species, and he becomes basically that.
Which is true. I think somebody said that right before COVID happened.
Yeah. Spoiler.
Flack for that.
Did you how many hate mails did you get just now?
Yeah. Man, this whole movie is just a fun movie, man. Is it even on anywhere streaming? So Spider-Man is unfortunately not on really any streaming service.
No, I mean
you can rent it on Vudu or YouTube TV for like $2.99 probably.
Yeah, and you can get like the quote unquote Hulu TV live TV subscription, you can watch it that way on TNT, but I mean
also, Zach, I know this is an ad free show, but our good friends at CDR Electronics, did you hear the big news? This month and all of next month, 50% off of their DVD and Blu-rays.
Are you okay?
No. I went into cardiac arrest when I heard the news, and then I started doing some math in my head, and I'm already broke tomorrow.
Well, I mean, so you also got to hit up the Criterion sale at Barnes & Noble.
50% off.
Yeah.
At CDR. But no, I think, but you know, for what it's worth, these movies are worth every penny. If you're a huge Spider-Man fan, or even if you're a super, I think if you're a film fan in general, Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3, I think it has to be in your collection. Whether you collect digitally or hard copies, it's got to be, I think you have to own it. You got to
be part of it, yeah.
Zach, you own them.
Yeah, I do.
So, yeah. I think this movie's really, really worth a watch, and watching it for this episode really made me appreciate it more.
Yeah, absolutely.
How many stars would you give it?
As a first film, it hits every box. It truly was something special when this movie originally came out, and I'm glad I was alive to be part of it. I mean, for me, I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. So I think that's, you know, you could give it a 10, but I think number 2 might, you know, say some, we're going to have some discussion.
That's a high rating, which means you're probably going to give 10 or 2 a 9.5 or 10. I don't know. I'm going to give this one an 8.
Okay.
There's nothing to complain about to me. The girthiness is just fine. It fits right in. The acting is great. There's nothing I can complain about other than that one small pajama scene.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, that's just nitpicking.
Well, and this movie is just sentimental to me just because of what was going on in my life. And so that one's always going to be in the back of, like, when I talk about that time, it's like, hey, Spider-Man came. Hey, this is the same. Spider-Man and Signs came out the same year.
The only thing that's probably making me not give this movie a 9 or anything higher and keeping it as an 8 is some of the, and I'm sure this is just because of the director and that's what they wanted, but some of it feels a little cartoonish, a little campy with some of the lines between Spider-Man and Green Goblin. But it's not terrible. And I think it's supposed to be that way. Just like some of the campy 89 Batman and Batman Returns. To me, that's what this movie feels like. It just feels Tim Burton-like. You could almost say Tim Burton directed it. And I'd be like, I believe you.
Yeah.
I would really believe you said Tim Burton directed this.
And, you know, we didn't even get to talk about, you know, we can talk about it a little bit, but the song Hero by
Chad Kroeger featuring Josie Scott.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care who you are. Like, you can complain all you want about Nickelback. You fucking love that song.
Yeah, that song is awesome. Great. And a very, very good Spider-Man soundtrack, to be honest with you. I think back in the day when you could get CDs, this hit the number one charts, I think, because of that song.
Absolutely.
So, and you know what? There's another song in Spider-Man 2 that just blew up. So we're going to talk about that as well. Zach, in just a few short words, what are you most looking forward to in the next few weeks with the Spider-Man conversation?
I think it'll be a fun conversation, you know, going forward. Spider-Man 2 is, you know, considered one of the all-time best. Spider-Man 3 is, you know, it is what it is. And then, you know, it'll be interesting to talk about 3 just because of this, you know, what could have happened with 4 and then, you know, going into Amazing Spider-Man, just kind of seeing what happened with that.
When's the last time you've seen Amazing Spider-Man? Has it been a minute?
Dude, I don't think I've seen those since... I think I watched Amazing Spider-Man 1 to get ready for 2, and I don't think I've seen him since. And that was 2014.
Well, that is what I'm most looking forward to. These are always the funnest episodes. I mean, a movie we've seen multiple times, we can talk for hours about it, and those are going to be good conversations. But the ones that you haven't seen in like almost 5, 6, 7, 8 years, those are going to be the ones that I'm most looking forward to.
And just to preview my thoughts, I remember really liking the first Amazing Spider-Man, and I don't, and I wasn't too high on Amazing Spider-Man 2. So
I think it's going to be a fun conversation. Andrew Garfield, Oscar, you know, nominated actor. Same with Emma Stone.
Yeah.
So I think those are going to be some fun conversations. Again, honestly, I haven't seen it since. I think it's going to be the same. The last time I've seen The Amazing Spider-Man is probably the week it came out on Blu-ray, and then the same thing with Amazing Spider-Man 2. I have not seen Amazing Spider-Man 2 more than 2 times, because when you brought up Green Goblin, I was like, he's in it? That's how bad I don't remember it.
I just remember a blue Jamie Foxx in Amazing Spider-Man 2.
That was Avatar, isn't he in Avatar?
Is that the prequel? Is that supposed to be the sequel to Avatar? I don't know.
Speaking of amazing songs...
Yeah.
Are you ready for Ghostbusters?
I am.
When's the last time you've seen Ghostbusters?
Truthfully, I think I watched it for the first time about 6 years ago.
6 years
ago? So this will be like a fresh rewatch.
Nice. And since we already know the top 5, we can go ahead and announce it, and you guys can play along. Send us in your top 5 SNL cast members.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if they're from the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, or today. Just send them in. And the only rule is that they've had to be a cast member.
Not host. Not like a host. They get celebrity.
So, like, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, can't be in it.
Yeah.
Andy
Samberg, Bill Hader, those could count.
Yeah, those do count. Even the female Ghostbusters cast.
Who? I don't know what you're talking about.
They count because they were cast members. So I think it's going to be fun. I'm going to watch 2. I'm going to watch Ghostbusters, and I'm going to watch the reboot from 2016 just to have a good conversation Monday. I'm very, very excited to talk about Ghostbusters. This is one of the movies that
I think you guys have been trying to do this for a while.
Yeah, we almost opened up the podcast with Ghostbusters, one of my all-time favorite movies. I'm a huge Bill Murray fan, so I can't wait to re-dig into it.
And hey, why not a perfect time? Because this Monday when we do the episode, Ghostbusters Afterlife hits theaters later that week.
Yep.
So
it'll be a fun conversation. Zach, do you have anything else you want to put the final nail in the coffin for Spider-Man?
No. Well, I'll see you next week for Spider-Man 2.
I can't wait. It's going to be a fun conversation. Monday, we talk all things Ghostbusters right here on the Cinnamon Movie Podcast. Afraid of the past. And he likes to guess.